Welcome to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast, presented by 13 Fishing Canada. Make your own luck. We're here to scratch that angling itch and talk everything fishing. Join us as we sit down with special guests from across the industry. Now, here's your hosts, Brandon Cater and Logan Lewis.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors, to what is part two of the Chris Summers interview. But before we get to that, I'd like to introduce my co-host here, Brandon Cater. I think we're both getting pretty excited here for the start of the season, but how's it going?
It's going pretty good, man. Like I talked about in the last episode, I didn't have anything ordered for spring, and I finally got one order placed, got a couple new lures and some line, and we got a couple new rods. Things are starting to come in. It's making everything pretty real. The ice fishing stuff's all packed away. Long rods are out. And yeah, we're just not too far away from opening day, May 5th, here in the southern zone, Saskatchewan. I'm sure there's a lot of guys just itching to go. A lot of lakes are still iced over, though. It's a late one this spring.
Yeah, no, I saw some pictures of Buffalo Pound there. And usually it ices off pretty good, pretty quick compared to some other places. And it's still, there's a couple cracks that have opened up pretty good. But other than that, it's still one solid piece of ice. At least, I don't know, the winds were pretty crazy today. So that might open things up a little bit more. But in talking to some people, it sounds like lots of guys are anticipating that it might be maybe half a week after the season starts, that they're able to actually get onto some of those bigger lakes where the ice is taking a while. I know up north, I've heard Candle is still frozen solid, places around there. So who knows when those will actually open up. Obviously, it opens up later up north. And I think, doesn't the season start later up north too?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the central zone is May 15th. Don't mark my words on that. I'm not looking at any details here, but I'm pretty sure the north zone is the 31st of May. So I think it's just like a 15-day, like 2-week transition between the south, central, and north.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I mean, obviously that ice, obviously not as warm up there either. But we haven't really had any heat at all. It's either been, it's been sunny, but windy as can be. So it's been chilly, or it's just been like random snowstorms that we've been having. So who knows when that'll happen, but hopefully I'll be prepared. I think as of recording this on Tuesday night, here, I think I'll have the boat home tonight and hopefully get, working on that.
Heck yeah. I know, like, even I was filling up with some fuel, and it looked like there was a few people either picking up boats from storage units or picking them up from dealers, taking them there for some maintenance, whatnot. Just boats everywhere. Everyone's just so hyped up. It kind of gets the juices flowing and thinking about that. But yeah, I saw a picture. I think our boy Tom Tang on Instagram posted a picture of Buffalo Pound. Yesterday, 1 year ago, it was wide open and there was no snow, nothing around the lake. And yeah, like you mentioned, it's still iced over, some big cracks. You know, Lane Meyer, previous podcast guest, he had some stories on Instagram, you know, the other day, he's walking on the middle of Last Mountain Lake. So it might be, you know, maybe a couple weeks yet, depending on the size of the lake.
Yeah, who knows? But even though the ice is out there, we're getting pretty close to some tournament dates, eh?
Yes, I think we're 38 or 37 days out from the SWT Saskatchewan Walleye Trail kickoff of the season. So I think Regina Beach is June 4th and 5th. So that'll be the first one. And then obviously the other three will follow suit. But yeah, just over a month away from tournament season kicking off for the SWT. Lots of guys, lots of hype around that. Last season looked like a fantastic season. Didn't participate in any of those trail tournaments, but this year, I think we're registered for the Regina Beach, and it's going to be exciting. Hopefully it's not as windy as last year. Last year, there was a lot of input on how the wind affected that weekend in that tournament. And yeah, hopefully the wind isn't like today. It's like 70 kilometer hour wind gusts here, and it's just nuts.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think we're both pretty excited and nervous. This is the first, like, we both fished the Buffalo Pound tournament last year, which was a lot of fun, right? But this is, like, I guess the first, like, big trail tournament that we're both going into, obviously fishing it together too. I think we're prepared for an ass kicking, but I think it's going to be a really good learning opportunity, and that's what we're looking for, right? Like, I think that's the biggest part of this all.
Learn and grow, baby, learn and grow. I mean, I'm humble beginnings. Like, I don't care. Let's just go there and catch some fish and, See what happens.
Yeah.
No. Fishing's unpredictable. You can pre-fish the whole week and then, you know, the fish move and you have no idea where they are on come tournament day. So
yeah,
it's super exciting. Lots of goodies coming in the mail to you. Just got a couple new rods.
Yeah.
13 Fishing just released the Gold Omen Gold series. Snagged a couple of those. Those are particularly walleye and smallie rods. But walleye, a lot of you listeners, I know, especially here in Saskatchewan, walleye rods. Go check out the Omen Gold series on 13fishing.ca. They're fantastic. They are one of the sexiest rods I think I've ever seen.
They do look pretty nice. They got that nice. Man. I like the gold trim right above the handle too. I like that. All looks nice.
Yeah, it's fantastic. One piece rod, the handle and cork. Everything's just pristine on it. I mean, you got a couple Omen Blacks, which are a fantastic rod as well. You know, and then I place a big order to you. You know, jig and wrap season. You know, in the midst of summer there, jig and wraps are going to be a go-to lure for me. And obviously, there's if you don't know, there's a couple new colors to the Rapilla released in a bunch of lures. But in the jig and wraps, there's a fruit punch color, head spin, glow pink squirrel, and glow slimy lime. So I picked up a few of those new colors. Right, try something new. Fish haven't seen them before, so
yeah.
Hopefully those are gonna convert and put some big fish in the boat. Obviously picked up some ripping wraps and some new Suffix line as well. I'm just fired up. Let's go.
Was that new color the one you had on your story of the ripping wrap, the like purple and lime green?
Yeah, I think the ripping wraps, I think there's like four new colors as well. But that was, so those were the jig and wrap colors. And the ripping wraps have, let's just see here.
I didn't even look at the new colors. I'm placing an order probably tonight as well.
Yeah, so there's four new colors for the ripping wrap as well.
Nice. Well, maybe I have to change my order a bit then.
Yeah, that purple one that was up on the story, that's called Black Light. And honestly, purple has been a lethal color for me. Whether it be a jig or, whatever, purple and gold. But this, this black light is a purple and black, which is pretty sexy as well. But there's a Juicy Lucy. I really like that. It's like it's a gold chrome, orange and yellow. But it's sold out right now, so I couldn't even get my hands on that. And there's Moldy Fruit and Voodoo Haze. So there's a lot of great colors. And obviously, right, we have Weekend Warriors. That's the code, Rapilla.ca. Save yourself 15% off whatever you want on the website. It doesn't have to be just Rapilla. Rapilla 13 Fishing, Strike Master, there's Storm, Suffix Line, VMC, get yourself some Terminal Tackle, Lure Jensen, Blue Fox, Terminator. There's numerous brands, so many products that you can choose from. Save yourself some money and stock up for the season.
Yeah, like I even got, I think I got four Dipsy Divers in my cart right now. So be saving 15% on those as well. I think that's gonna, I didn't have any. I was always borrowing them from my buddies when I was going to do lake trout or some stocked lakes for trout that are a bit deeper there in the kind of in the middle of summer. So definitely looking forward to that. But I guess like I mentioned at the top of the episode, this is part two with Dr. Chris Summers from the U of R Sport Fish Research Group. So it was kind of, I think the back probably three quarters of it is kind of Q&A. But Chris knows so much that he was able to elaborate on these questions, and it was kind of awesome getting to hear his thoughts on it. He definitely was going to tell us what was on his mind, whether it was kind of like the part, I think we talked about fizzing quite a bit in the first episode, right?
Yeah.
And that was something I wasn't too sure about either way of the aisle on that. And it was nice to hear what he thought, what he actually thought. And so that kind of definitely changed my thoughts on it. Not that they were negative before, I just was in the middle. I just didn't know. So I think we get into a little bit about introducing species in some of these questions. And I think the answer might be different than some people would think. Not in a bad way at all. I'd always kind of thought, just obviously you got to worry about it changing wherever you're introducing those species. But I've always thought like, hey, what's the big deal if you throw some smallmouth here? They survive over in Manitoba, so they should be fine here. I was thinking more, oh, they'll survive, not what effects it could really have. So I think that was pretty interesting. But before we get into that, got to give a quick thanks to our sponsors.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, first off, we have to give big thanks to you, our friends over at Saskatchewan Wildlife Federation. They've been fantastic to work with. We love being partners with them. They do so much for the province, our fisheries, places that we hunt, everything to do with the wildlife. So go grab yourself a membership. Download the Saskatchewan Master Angler app. There's been a lot of stories up. So many people have been catching master angler fish. Everyone's receiving, you know, certificates, pins, recognition for their catches. Mm-hmm. And it's just super cool. I mean, obviously, there's been a program over in Manitoba. Saskatchewan's is still very new. It's in the infant stages still. So if you do have any feedback, don't be afraid to, message us on Instagram or Facebook. And we'll be sure to forward that on to our friend James and Saskatchewan Wildlife and any type of upgrades or adjustments to the program to make it more user-friendly, I think is something, they're looking to do it moving forward.
Yeah, I'll have to throw mine up on the story. I got my burbot and my walleye certificates, and they're nice. They're like nice paper, not cheap paper. Like, this stuff is it's thick, no, and they look nice.
Oh yeah, James didn't cheap out.
And it's nice. It's got like a little outline of like the classic look of whatever that fish is in the background, so each certificate's different. It's pretty sweet. And I actually just, I think since the last episode, renewed my membership, since I'll be entering the Buffalo Pound Tournament. Pick that up easy enough. You can pay through PayPal on the website. Nice, quick, and easy. You just send them an email with the transaction number, and they'll mail out the membership and everything to you. So yeah, definitely quick and easy. It helps out with the fun and whatnot. So I definitely suggest it. But next up, we have Blackfish Gear. You can find an exclusive code for them in the show notes below. Definitely, like I said last episode as well, going to be a big part of my spring fishing gear. It's kind of the stuff they got is perfect for our spring and fall, especially. Things really kind of, the temperature drops off like crazy when you're pulling the boat out of the water and it's starting to get dark here in the spring. I definitely noticed that last year. And once again, the pullover, I'll be wearing those.
Big time.
So nice. Yeah, especially when you can kind of trap some of that heat in with the bibs as well. It definitely helps when the temperatures start to drop there. But like I said, exclusive discount code in the show notes below. It's only on the podcast. We don't have it on the socials or anything. So if you're looking for any of that stuff, be sure to check them out.
Yeah, absolutely. Their website is currently down. It's supposed to be back up first week in May. I was trying to order something the other day, and it's definitely down for maintenance. So check back, beginning of May. Go grab that code in the show notes and save yourself 15%, because I know I am.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then I guess before we hop into the interview, we'll have a quick word here from Lucky Bastard Distillers. And I guess we hope you enjoy part two with Dr. Chris Summers.
There are certain moments in life that really stick with you. This is definitely one of them. The thrill of the dill, my friends, is not a myth.
Prohibition is over, Saskatchewan. Ask about LB's legendary Birmingham's Dill Pickle Vodka. After all, it's not a party until someone pulls out the pickle. Tours and tastings available. Call or stop by 814 47th Street East. And tonight, why not mix your Caesar with some Lucky Bastard?
It's the one with the pickle in it.
Well, we did put up a story on Instagram, and we like to do this with majority of our listeners. Give them an opportunity that, they might not get to ask, our guests any questions that they might have. With you being Saskatchewan-based and majority of our listeners being Saskatchewan-based as well, there's quite a few questions. We might not get through them all, but there's a few, we'll go through like a little Q&A section here with you, and you can answer them in as long as short of answers as you want. But just an opportunity for some of our listeners to get some answers, maybe.
Sounds good. I will try to be succinct if I can.
No, I got all day for this, so it's all up to you. It's all about how much time you have.
All right.
Okay. Within Saskatchewan, obviously, there's only one body of water that, holds a large amount of bass. This question is there a way that we can make smallmouth bass sustain in Saskatchewan?
Other than just one place, two places.
So, yeah, it's a good question. Bass are super popular fish in other parts of Canada.
Yep.
Smallmouth bass do fairly well in northern environments. So, all the way through central Ontario, they're present in large numbers. So the short answer is we probably could. There are at least four lakes in Saskatchewan that were trial stocked with smallmouth bass at a time in history when the government was experimenting with different species to put in some of the lakes. So mm-hmm. we do still have a couple of lakes with populations of bass, of smallmouth bass in them. I guess the question that I would return back to the listener is, should we, right? So we maybe could, but should we? And the reason I say that is that some places end up with bass and they start to competitively exclude the more native predators. And my personal opinion is that if you have a reservoir or you have, you know, kind of a human-centric type of system where you want to put in a fishery, maybe that's the place you put in a fish that comes from somewhere else. But right. if you have natural lakes with good, healthy native fish populations, why not work your fisheries enhancement to make that fishery as good as it can be, yep. rather than to put in an additional species that may or may not thrive there. So I think we could, with a targeted stocking program and some good effort at site selection, we could have smallmouth bass populations here. But so we could, but I'm not sure that we should.
Okay.
Right. I think that makes sense. Like we have a dugout, or I guess quite a bit bigger than a dugout, but a dugout that we stock with rainbows. And I know trout are different in the sense of they're not supposed to be reproducing in those terms. Right. So maybe that's not as much of an issue, but it's a closed off body of water. There's no way that they're going to go anywhere else. And I guess that's where you kind of run into that issue with stocking actual lakes and whatnot, is things can change and like, you never know maybe where they could end up, especially if they're a breeding stock, right?
Right. Yeah. And it's I think whatever we do with introduced species, we want to make sure it's done in a very controlled and safe fashion. And mm-hmm. There's many examples of places where that control gets lost and then you end up with undesirable situations. Maybe right. we wouldn't run into that as much with this part of the world because it's difficult for smallmouth bass to make a living here. And then, you know, you got to work harder to have a smallmouth bass population. And then that brings me back to the same question of, you know, is it worth the effort when we have other native species that might, you know, do better and still provide a good fishery.
Yeah. Right. Because you look just east of us in Manitoba, they've got smallies quite far north, right? So it's not like it's as much an issue of our environment. It's just a question of if that's something that should be happening, right? Because right. they're different compared to the largemouth, where I feel like we don't have a very conducive environment other than down in Estevan, where the water's like 28 degrees or whatever it is.
Right. And even that, you know, with the phase out of coal, which we're starting to do a new program on boundary as well, working on largemouth bass this year because of that. You know, the water temperature is expected to go down over time as they phase out the coal generation there. So, you know, can that largemouth bass population persist? That's a pretty interesting question as well.
Right.
That's actually,
people do ice fish for them.
That's a question I had.
Yeah, they ice fish for them, but it's a question of, are you ice fishing on 6 inches of ice or 3 feet of ice? And I think how harsh our winters are compared to those places that are ice fishing for them.
Right.
That's pretty cool. I've done a couple trips to Manitoba and got to go for smallies there, and they're definitely a great time fishing for, but I see the science side of, is it something that we want to have to deal with in the sense of what could happen if they did come in? So
yeah, and I think there's also there's the startup, right? We got to have the hatchery ability to rear them and to produce them and to, you know, to seed populations and then to continue doing that if the seeded populations don't do well. So there's a whole bunch of considerations that go into it,
right,
above and beyond the idea that, you know, so for example, I love largemouth bass. Like boundary is one of my favorite places to go just because I'm the first guy to say, as a scientist, I'm not that keen on non-native species, but man, mm-hmm. do I love those bass. Right.
Yeah.
And so that love of bass, you know, has to be tempered with a little bit of kind of practical and, right. You know, thought about long term. So right. and so I feel that desire, right? You want to go and catch a cool fish, but there's got to be a bit more to it than that, I think, to make it a viable program.
No, yeah, for sure. It could be kind of a careful what you wish for. You got the smallmouth you wanted, but now what's what's gone or could be gone.
Right.
That kind of answers one of the other questions we had on what are your thoughts on adding more game fish species in Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
Because I think the number of game fish that gets tossed around here as a lot is like 27 or 28, I think, for your generally catchable species, I guess. But that kind of answered that. So I guess we'll go to one of our former guests, Zach Brown. He asked, I think they kind of go together. He guides way up north. So he has a lot of experience with this, and he has a lot of similar views that we do with it when it comes to fish handling and whatnot. But I guess this would kind of be a two-parter in the sense of how much of a difference do you notice fish growth from northern Saskatchewan to southern Saskatchewan? And then he asked in a general form of how old would you say or guess that a 20-pound pike is? I guess it could be, based on the answer to the first question, that could be different depending on where you are.
Yeah, so the short answer is there is tremendous growth variation on a latitudinal gradient. So the further north you go, the slower growing the fish are. Doesn't mm-hmm. matter what species, that's a general rule of thumb. So a pike that's in Last Mountain Lake has a completely different length at age relationship than one that's in Wollaston Lake. So the growth profiles for them are on a completely different time schedule. So I would guess, and this is a complete guess, that if you're at a northern lake, let's say you go up into the, you know, above the road line in Saskatchewan and you're at a fly-in camp or something, you're getting a 20-pound pike up there, it's probably going to be 15 to 20 years old.
Okay, that makes sense. And that's, I think, something to think about because those, I mean, it was different back in the day, but those lakes, when guys went up there, that was it was a pillage, it seemed like, right? Like it was, you're going up there, you're flying up north, you're taking as much as you can. And the number of big fish that there is in some of those lakes, it really makes you think now of how old that fish actually is compared to one down here.
Right. And what really, the specific, to kind of connect the dots there, the specific thought I always have is that if I kill that fish, either on purpose or by accident, by not doing a good catch and release, it's going to take 20 years to replace it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so when you think about, when we think about lake recovery, let's say we go there and we do some kind of, a commercial harvest, or there's a disease outbreak, or a lake that hasn't experienced any angling pressure before all of a sudden opens up to angling and a bunch of those big fish get harvested. And then there's no big fish left and you're waiting for the population to quote unquote recover, right? You might have to wait 15 years from that point, right? Because you got to get your 4 and 5 year old fish to grow mm-hmm. up to that stage. So that age relationship with size is critically important from a fisheries management perspective. And that's why we have these size-based regulations for, you can keep a fish of this size, but not that size, or you can keep this many of fish in this size range, but not that size. And circles back full circle to the burbot problem with no size restriction at all on what you can keep there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one issue would be they're so hard to measure. How would you even know exactly how long it is?
Yeah, you need to. I have a 180 centimeter musky bumper board that we use for pike. That's what you have to carry with you.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I think it's even, like you said, it takes 15, 20 years to replace that fish. But I would even go further and say it's kind of exponential in the sense of obviously fish get to a certain point where I'm sure reproduction isn't very good anymore, but you remove that fish, well, that fish was probably going to reproduce this year. And so it's not just that fish that you've now removed, it's the next 5-10 years, we'll say, of really prime spawning time too, that's also been removed.
Right. So that's a critical point. Spawning in the future that you remove, you just don't know what that effect is. But the other thing I wanted to add there is that this spawning senescence that you referred to, or the idea that, if a female fish, as it gets bigger, somehow it's less efficient or it's not as good at spawning, it's actually not true. Those big old fish are good at spawning. They produce some of the best quality eggs. They're the survivors of in that population. They're the best spawners right up until the very end. Right.
Oh, so, okay. I was thinking maybe it would teeter off in the last, we'll say year or three of their life, and just like kind of as people get older, I'm sure that's menopause. Not going on as much. So
So I know we tend to think about it in that light, but fish don't work the same way. They're right up until the very end, those big females are prime breeders and populations.
That just reinforces it even more then. So no, that's good.
That's fantastic to hear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's why we always say big fish should almost always go back, right? Unless there's something wrong with them or, you know, if they're injured beyond repair or something like that. But
just want to jump in here for a quick word. If you're looking for a boat this summer, fishing, pontoon boats, definitely check out our friend JP Adventure Rentals and Sask Best Boat Rentals. Here's a quick word from them and everything that they have to offer.
Get your adventure on with JP Adventure Rentals in Saskatchewan. Whether it's remote ice fishing, hunting, trail riding, or just taking family and friends out for a day of fun, JP Adventure Rentals has you covered with brand new ATVs, snowmobiles, aluminum trailers, plus accessories. Visit jpadventurerentals.ca to make your reservation. Check out our sister company, Saskatchewan's Best Boat Rentals, for all of your boat rental needs. Pre-book now. Get out there with JP Adventure Rentals. We rent fun.
We touched on this on the first portion of the interview, the routes and, you know, tracking fish and kind of seeing where they go. What is one of the wildest routes that you've witnessed on a tracked fish?
Yeah, so if these are fish that we're talking about that have transmitters on them. So yeah. We had fish at, we were tracking fish on Tobin Lake after the Vanity Cup tournament in October.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we had two fish. So we wanted to get a good size range represented from the population there. We had two fish that were right around the 50 centimeter mark. So these are not giant walleye, just kind of a nice size. And we released them in Nipawin. And by the next day, they were out at Pemmican Point, which is, I don't know if you guys have fished the Tobin Lake, kind of the river system there before, but it's an
easy... I just know it's the big point.
Yeah, it's probably 18, 19 river kilometers. So these fish, it was just those two, right? We had a bunch of fish that we put transmitters on, all of different sizes. Those two, 50 centimeters-ish, took off like crazy. They were gone, 18, 19 kilometers in a 12 to 14 hour period, which is crazy. I guess to add to that, the other crazy one I wanted to kind of mention in this category was a fish that, from the same system. So we had, this was a different year, but the same tournament, we put a transmitter on a really big fish. It was like a 79 centimeter, 13 pound walleye. It swam upstream from Nipawin towards the old railway bridge and stopped. And every day for 7 days, it was in exactly the same location. And so I crossed it off the list of fish tracked and said, fish is dead in the notes, right? Because what are the chances of a fish sitting in the same 3 meters of water every day for 7 days in a row? 2 weeks later, I get an email from an angler saying they caught a tagged fish and it has this transmitter thingy on it, and sent me a picture. And sure enough, it was this fish. It was the 13 pounder and it was 21 or 20 kilometers, to the east from where it had been sitting for those 7 days when we tracked it. So it absolutely was not dead. It was just resting.
Zombie.
Yeah, just, after you run a marathon, how you just lie on the couch and, don't move for days on end. That's what it was doing. So that one actually floored me more than the two that moved the 19 kilometers in the overnight period, just because I was so convinced the fish was dead. And then when I saw it again and, looked at location on the map, I just said, maybe I don't know anything about fish at all.
Yeah.
No, that's baffling.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. I think, I guess as you could probably guess, there's some pretty specific questions that probably your answer could be used for specific gain or personal gain. Sorry, with where are fish right now? But,
you can leave out the lake names though.
No, I know. I'm going to turn it into more of a general sense. We've had some questions about spawning. So, I always think of our lakes down here a bit different than lots of maybe other stuff you read about lakes in the States or out west, out east, stuff like that. Like as far as we'll say walleye, like what are they looking for in our southern lakes here for spawning habitat?
Yeah, they're looking for two different major categories of spawning area. So there's lake spawners and there's river spawners. The lake spawners are looking for shallow, kind of gravelly points or shelves or just sort of places in the lake where they can get to a good substrate and where the water is going to be a little bit warmer. Mm-hmm. And they are spawning at around when the water hits around 7 degrees in the spring. And so, you know, they're an early spring spawner, contrasted by river spawners that are looking for creek mouths or for, actually areas they can swim upstream, and they're spawning in flowing water, a little bit like salmon or trout, where they're looking again for that kind of, rocky substrate and shallow water where they can deposit eggs. So if you think about a lake like Diefenbaker, which is, you know, really, really big and diverse in terms of habitat, you get fish that are spawning in Caddo Bay, you know, in shallow areas that are lake-like, and you get fish that are spawning in Swift Current Creek, where they're swimming, you know, quite a ways upstream into shallow flowing water and spawning on gravel like salmon would. So, so basically, walleye are looking for two things, either a shallow sort of pebbly area in the lake, or they're looking for flowing water with a similar kind of substrate.
Okay. And in a sense of flowing, is this, does the rate of the flow matter? Or is it just movement?
I think it's just movement.
Okay.
Yeah. Walleye are not a truly athletic fish like some of the salmonids are. So, you know, slow moving is good for them.
Yeah. So we're kind of, some of the walleye guys listen to this. We've so far, walleyes are wimps and they're not very athletic.
Yeah, I'll be on the blacklist, I guess, but
yeah, those tournament invites might slow down after hearing that about the walleyes. No, I think that's interesting. It's something I've always, it's always cool, like having a cabin out at Buffalo. Like lots of the creeks are dry 90% of the year. We get some runoff and all of a sudden there's suckers up there, stuff like that. We had one day where it had cut off from the lake. There was no flow to the lake anymore, but we found a pool that was about 5 feet deep. And I think we caught, I think it was like 8 suckers, put them in Rubbermaid, took them to the lake, let them go kind of thing. And it's cool to see. You don't think about that stuff when it's a populated area and whatnot. You don't think about nature still being nature and doing its thing, where this creek's dry all year, no sign of water anywhere. And all of a sudden now there's fish up it. So I think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
We have one here. Kind of while we're on the spawning topic, do we know if or how dropping water levels impact spawning grounds?
It's a good question. Several important species, so pike, for example, rely on flooded vegetation areas for spawning habitat.
Okay.
And so if you have a drought year or you have a reservoir where the springtime water volume suddenly drops, that kind of flooded habitat is not available. And so it does potentially have an impact on reproduction if you have big changes in water level. Okay. So I think the short answer to that is that it could affect spawning productivity for some of those spawners that need that flood area.
Okay. Yeah, there's a couple questions here with spawning, and the next one was kind of, what do you know what the likelihood would be of a stock trout spawning? So like, say one from our stocking program that they're made not to produce reproduce, correct?
Correct, yeah. So there's hybrid trout that are produced for the spawning program, for the stocking program. Those are not going to be able to reproduce. They're sterile hybrids.
Okay.
And the you know, I often get asked about trout from the fish farm, for example, on Diefenbaker, Lucky mm-hmm. Lake there. Those are triploids. So they actually have a chromosome manipulation that makes them incapable of reproduction. And that is by design, right? Because if you do get escapees, you don't want them, you know, reproducing and taking over the system that they get released into. So I think the answer to the question is that if you stock hybrid trout, there's no reproduction. If you stock rainbow trout or something like that, where, you know, they're coming from a fertile line that is reproductively active, they potentially mm-hmm. could reproduce. So if you put rainbow trout in your dugout, for example, they could potentially spawn.
Right. Well, we have had them. We have caught them when they'll start spewing out eggs when we land them. But I just didn't know if those were capable of, like, if they still had the eggs but they're just duds, or if they're able to turn into anything.
Yeah, lots of the hybrids will produce eggs but they're duds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shooting blanks. Okay.
There you go.
Sounds good.
Back onto the burbot train a little bit. Obviously, you know, majority of the time in the winter when they are most catchable, you're kind of in that 25 to 30 feet range. But what kind is the shallowest that burbot go throughout the year? I know that, you know, you have minimal tags and tracking on burbot, you know, throughout the summer. They're catch and tagging programs probably slim to none, with people reporting catches on burbot. But like, do we know kind of what are the depths that burbot range throughout the year?
Yeah, so
I caught it in 3 feet.
Yeah,
3 feet, eh?
Yeah. So in the ice season, they basically go from, you know, like Logan is saying, 3 feet to 60 feet. You'll find them throughout that entire span.
Okay.
We have caught them in survey nets in 2.5 feet of water in the summer. That was, you know, they're active at night and they get caught in the net. And then when we go in the morning, they're in there. So They are all over the map in terms of depth. And, you know, they forage, spawn, summer hibernate, all at a range of different depths. And so they're everywhere.
They're so unpredictable.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's why they're the best. That's why they're the best.
That's what makes them mysterious, yeah.
and they're not wimps.
No, yeah, actually, you know what? That's a funny story that just comes to mind here. My son, Phil, he caught a burbot in Last Mountain Lake that had no eyes. So It wasn't that it was blind. It was that it had eye sockets that were empty and the skin had grown over the back of them. So literally no eyeballs. And yet it was a nice big burbot. It was around 7 pounds. It was still actively feeding. He caught it on a, you know, on a jigging spoon. So, You know, talk about not being wimps. It didn't even have any eyeballs and it was still out there. So Pretty cool.
And we've talked in previous episodes about like their exterior taste receptors and, you know, doesn't even have eyes, but is able to still eat, you know, a spoon. So.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
Yeah. No, and even just you look at, like, I know a couple that I've kept, their bellies are always full of crayfish for the most part. And I can't imagine they're the nicest thing to eat.
They might give you a little indigestion, a little heartburn.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if they're still kicking around there. They got their claws and everything going. But I think, with staying on the burbot topic again, is probably one of our last questions here. We were actually able to cover most of them or parts of them, but it comes from Scott, Shayna's fiance, and I'm kind of curious as well. It could be in general in the terms of, will you be doing the acoustic tracking again on buffalo? But he's wondering, when will you be tracking burbot again, potentially on buffalo?
Yeah, so I think any burbot tracking that I would do would be in the context of angling somehow. So basically asking more directly how they behave after they've been caught and released. And It would be more of an ice fishing type context just because that's when they're most susceptible.
Right.
So when that will happen, I'm not 100% sure, but I can almost guarantee that it would be on Last Mountain Lake. I'm just starting to figure out burbot on that lake a little bit. So I feel like that would be a good one to study them on. I don't like traveling on the ice over long distances that much on Last Mountain Lake, but you know, the burbot population there is pretty good. So the bottom line is the plan is look at behavior post-release, but I don't have a date that I can give Scott yet for when that study is going to happen.
Okay. Well, I'm sure he'll be paying attention. So.
I was going to say, but he could come volunteer to chase fish around on the ice with me if he feels so inclined.
Yeah, I'm sure he wouldn't say no to that, as he's already done it probably quite a bit with the group. So
yes, for sure.
I think that's good, and that's something. Obviously, it takes a ton of time, especially with like the limited amount of the limited size of the group too, right? Because I guess one thing is it's all students that you're doing this with, right?
Yeah, so my life revolves around graduate students and undergraduate students and their research projects. So honors thesis projects, master's and PhD projects. That's how we get work done. So when I talk about problem-based research, someone comes to me and says, hey, we're really interested in this. My job is to attract grant funding and convert it into an opportunity to train students at the same time as to do the science. So a lot of our questions become master's theses or undergrad theses. And so a great example right now would be that I have an honors student doing a fourth year thesis on what factors affect the probability of walleye being recaptured in our TAG program. And then I have a graduate student, Julie Stewart, master's project on the winter tip-up work. So that's her, that becomes her thesis project. So I would say that the real limiting factor is not so much people, it's money. And so all of this stuff is quite costly to do. And the availability of grant funds and my, my ability to convince people that it's worth spending money on this kind of thing is the limiting factor for sure. If, you know, when folks are thinking, well, why don't scientists do this or why don't they do that? Most of the time, the answer is because we don't have the resources to make that happen. And I wish that wasn't the case because, you know, it seems to me like we should be investing in this kind of thing. But, you know, political and financial realities are often different than, you know, what we perceive them to be. So,
So in a sense, like, I know based on the UNR, U of R and everything, but do you get lots of requests for people to volunteer to help? Or is that even a thing that's possible with just the metrics of the program?
Yeah, we actually do get a fair number of requests to volunteer. And we try our best to incorporate folks if they're eager, if there's a way we can get them involved. Sometimes we can't. And, you know, I always feel bad about that because if there's an interest, I want to foster that. But we have had volunteer anglers, for example. The tip-up study is a great one where we can equip them with all of our standardized gear and they can participate in catching pike for that program. We've had volunteer anglers that help us with fish tagging. We've had volunteer anglers help us with fish surveys. So there's a lot of things that we partner up with anglers for and try to harness some of that interest and energy to help us with the program.
Yeah, because like I know even like we were talking about earlier when I came out with Shayna the one day with the tip-up study, like I was so jacked up. I got to get to go fishing, but now there's like a purpose behind it. And I was like, that's just add so much more to it. So I think we had quite a few flags, but I think we only landed a couple of fish, but it was still just cool seeing how you guys go about everything and how much from one fish being caught, how many different data points you're able to gather and kind of what you look at with all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I think, like I said, anglers are all biologists, whether they will confess it or not. And when you get them out there and they start thinking about it, and they're actually amazing field assistants, right? They all know how to handle fish. They all know how to de-hook a fish. So it's all just an extension of what they normally do. We just get them to think about it in a slightly different way.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I guess this is probably one of the longest times we've recorded with anyone. It's been awesome. I'm sure this will raise a lot more questions from people, so we'll probably have to get you on again at some point.
There'll be lots of things I'll have to defend that I say.
I think so. And I think a lot of it agrees with the people who actually care about the sport and the future of it and whatnot. I think it's a lot of similar ideas that you're saying that a lot of people can get behind and agree with. But one thing I wanted to ask to leave people with what's something I guess that you see from the science side of it that you'd like to kind of leave people with at the end of the episode here.
I think the message I'd like to give to people is actually not from the science side. It's more from the kind of emotional side, which is that I think as anglers as a group, we love to be outside, we love nature, we love the opportunity to be able to catch fish and admire them, and I think I encourage people to pursue that passion and to do it in a way that results in as little negative impact to fish populations as possible, so everyone can continue to enjoy fisheries and that future generations can continue to enjoy them as well. And I don't think that's a very difficult message to sell because I think we all want that. So
No, absolutely.
Totally there was no science there. Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's even better. That's coming right from the heart. So I think that's a important thing to keep in mind. So I guess now's your chance to plug away. Where can everyone find you? Like, I think a lot of people that don't follow are going to want to follow along after this and see all the great posts, like actually getting to see the science, right? You can know that the science is going on, but when you actually are able to put that into one of the videos or just even a post about walleye such and such was caught and this is when it was caught before, like where can people find all that stuff?
Yeah, so our Facebook page is called Saskatchewan Sport Fish Research Group, and it's as easy as going on the search icon on Facebook on your home screen and just typing in Saskatchewan Sport Fish Research Group. You'll be able to link up and follow there. I have a website, which is summersbiology.ca. So that's S-O-M-E-R-S biology.ca. There's some information there. There's profiles of current students and projects. There's a publication list. So everything that we do ends up published in peer-reviewed scientific journals. So it becomes a permanent resource for other folks, as well as the information we communicate to anglers. That's all listed there. There's the guide to Saskatchewan Fish ID, which I published a few years back, which is linked up there as well. And there's also a tool for submitting fish tag returns on that webpage, like a pro forma document you can fill out, okay, and it submits the tag return information directly to me.
Okay.
So those are the two major ways to kind of see and communicate with us. My email address is Chris, so chris.summers@uregina.ca. Always happy to correspond with folks by email as well. And I guess the last plug that I would like to make while we're on here is that, you know, we are always on the lookout for invasive Prussian carp. And I know, yes, anglers are quite good at pulling out fish and saying, hey, I don't recognize this. If that happens, we would love to hear from folks as well, because we're still trying to get a grip on where those fish are in Saskatchewan and, how much they're moving over time.
No, I think that's a good point. I don't even know how we didn't touch on that, because that was Shayna's baby at the end of her time with the group, right? So I think,
right,
like I didn't know what they were. I know it's kind of a seemingly a bit of a newer thing here at least, but like I was actually out on Deef and found a dead one floating in one of the coulees, and I wouldn't have known what it was. And then I'd seen your guys' post about it, and then talking to Shayna, sent Shayna a text. I said, hey, is this one of your guys? And she's like, yeah. So I let her know where it was and everything. So I think that's a good point. I don't know how we didn't even talk about that, but yeah.
We had so many things to talk about. It's just, we just ran out of time. But the reality is if you give a professor a chance to talk, he's going to talk for 2 hours. It's just the way it is. So
yeah, no, that works out perfect for a podcast. So we'll definitely have to have you on again. We really appreciate it. It was great getting to kind of see a lot of behind the scenes of what actually is being done with the group and kind of some of the actual data behind it that you can kind of put your words behind. So I really enjoyed that. And I think Brandon did too. I know his Absolutely. Voice was not enjoying it as much this podcast. So he didn't get to speak as much, but we really appreciate you coming on.
Well, I appreciate you hosting me and really appreciate the opportunity to communicate with your listeners. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
There you have it, everybody. A fantastic episode. Part two with Dr. Chris Summers. He's such an informational human being. Just getting a different perspective, a scientific perspective on our fisheries, fish research, tracking. It's so interesting and something I think it's overlooked a lot, right? And right, that's why he started the Saskatchewan Sport Fish Research Group, is there wasn't anything like this in the province before. So we're very thankful that he was able to sit down with us, and obviously we're really appreciative that he started this and, you know, is continuing to do his research here in the province. It's vital. It really is.
Yeah, no, I'm already looking forward to the next time we have him on.
Yes,
we didn't even scratch the surface there with all the stuff he knows, and he's said it before, like he loves to talk about it. And we love to listen. It's pretty cool that this is going on right in our home province here. And you can actually be like, when he talks about tagging fish on Buffalo Pound, like, I actually know where that is, or tagging fish on Tobin and stuff like that, right? It's not just some study you hear about out in Ontario, and maybe the outcome of the study is cool, but you don't know where that place actually is, right? So it's definitely cool having something like that close to home, and awesome to have him come and sit down with us and have us pick his brain.
Yeah, and any of you listeners that are out of province, not here in Saskatchewan, now you have some information, and you can kind of pick and choose your lakes and whatnot, and you can message Dr. Chris Summers too and get some information. If you're here in the province and you catch a tagged fish, make sure you reach out and report that fish to him, and it's going to be pretty interesting what what he, the information he gives back to you. So,
yeah, for sure. And I like I did say, it was cool that it's right in our backyard here. But if there is anyone listening out of province that has someone who's doing a similar project, wherever they are, whether it's in your state or your province, and you want us to potentially have them on, let us know. We're always looking for different people to have on. And I think it'd be cool to see, like, we have our set species, right? We don't have a ton of species. Yeah. We have a good amount, but you get into like Ontario, down to the States, there could be some really cool other projects, research projects that are going on that I think there could be some really cool outcomes from that would be pretty sweet to have on the pod as well.
No, absolutely. And of course, we have to give a huge shout out to our presenting sponsor, 13 Fishing Canada. They've been on with us from day one, and honestly, they've been fantastic to work with. The brand is, you know, itself is amazing. The products they make are second to none. Rods, reels, baits, like we mentioned in the intro, use the code WeekendWarriors and save yourself off 15% off 13 Fishing, as well as any other brand on Rapella.ca.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Any other brand, like I said at the top of the episode here, like I've got some Dipsy divers in my cart. I've got a couple different types of VMC jigs. Yeah. I've got some 13 plastics, and then I've also got some Rapala jerkbaits as well. So it's kind of all across the board there. The fact that I guess the discount code works across the entire website now is coming clutch for getting ready for the new season.
Yeah. And for any season too, right? Spring, summer, fall, yeah. Ice season, what have you. So go check out Rapella.ca. All the codes will be in the show notes below. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. Thank you if this is an episode that you've tuned in and it's your first. We appreciate you tuning in. Go back. There's some great episodes. If you tune into every episode, we appreciate you and we hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks for tuning in to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your favorite listening platform so we can reach more anglers just like you. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for media updates and behind-the-scenes content.